the experiencer who is prior to all experience, but without whom there would be no experience. So who is the experiencer?
You are.
And who are you?
Consciousness.
And what is consciousness?
This question cannot be answered.
The moment you answer it, you have falsified it, made it into another object.
Consciousness, the traditional word for which is spirit, cannot be known in the normal sense of the word, and seeking it is futile.
All knowing is within the realm of duality, subject and object, the knower and the known. The subject, the I, the knower without which nothing could be known, perceived, thought or felt, must remain forever unknowable. This is because the I has no form. Only forms can be known. And yet without the formless dimension, the world of form could not be. It is the luminous space in which the world arises and subsides. That space is the life that I am. It is timeless. I am timeless, eternal. What happens in that space is relative and temporary. Pleasure and pain, gain and loss, birth and death. The greatest impediment to the discovery of inner space, the greatest impediment to finding the experiencer, is to become so enthralled by the experience that you lose yourself in it. It means consciousness is lost in its own dream. You get taken in by every thought, every emotion, and every experience to such a degree that you are in fact in a dreamlike state. This has been the normal state of humanity for thousands of years. Although you cannot know consciousness, you can become conscious of it as yourself. You can sense it directly in any situation, no matter where you are. You can sense it here and now, as your very presence, the inner space in which the words on this page are perceived and become thoughts. It is the underlying I am. The words you are reading and thinking are the foreground, and the I am is the substratum, the underlying background to every experience, thought, feeling. The breath. Discover inner space by creating gaps in the stream of thinking. Without those gaps, your thinking becomes repetitive, uninspired, devoid of any creative spark, which is how it still is for most people on the planet. You don't need to be concerned with the duration of those gaps. A few seconds is good enough. Gradually, they will lengthen by themselves, without any effort on your part. More important than their length is to bring them in frequently, so that your daily activities and your stream of thinking become interspersed with space. Someone recently showed me the annual prospectus of a large spiritual organization. When I looked through it, I was impressed by the wide choice of interesting seminars and workshops. It reminded me of a smorgasbord, one of those Scandinavian buffets where you can take your pick from a huge variety of enticing dishes. The person asked me whether I could recommend one or two courses. "I don't know," I said. "They all look so interesting." "But I do know this," I added. "Be aware of your breathing as often as you are able, whenever you remember. Do that for 1 year, and it will be more powerfully transformative than attending all of these courses. And it's free." Being aware of your breathing takes attention away from thinking and creates space. It is one way of generating consciousness. Although the fullness of consciousness is already there as the unmanifested, we are here to bring consciousness into this dimension. Be aware of your breathing. Notice the sensation of the breath.
Feel the air moving in and out of your body. Notice how the chest and abdomen expand and contract slightly with the in and out breath. One conscious breath is enough to make some space where before there was the uninterrupted succession of one thought after another. One conscious breath, two or three would be even better, taken many times a day, is an excellent way of bringing space into your life. Even if you meditated on your breathing for 2 hours or more, which some people do, one breath is all you ever need to be aware of, indeed, ever can be aware of. The rest is memory or anticipation, which is to say, thought. Breathing isn't really something that you do, but something that you witness as it happens. Breathing happens by itself. The intelligence within the body is doing it. All you have to do is watch it happening. There's no strain or effort involved. Also, notice the brief cessation of the breath, particularly the still point at the end of the out-breath, before you start breathing in again. Many people's breath is unnaturally shallow. The more you're aware of the breath, the more its natural depth will re-establish itself. Because breath has no form as such, it has since ancient times been equated with spirit, the formless one life. God formed man of dust from the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and the man became a living creature. The German word for breathing, Atmen, is derived from the ancient Indian Sanskrit word, Atman, meaning the indwelling divine spirit, or God within. The fact that breath has no form is one of the reasons why breath awareness is an extremely effective way of bringing space into your life, of generating consciousness. It is an excellent meditation object precisely because it is not an object, has no shape or form. The other reason is that breath is one of the most subtle and seemingly insignificant phenomena. The least thing that, according to Nietzsche, makes up the best happiness. Whether or not you practice breath awareness as an actual formal meditation is up to you. Formal meditation, however, is no substitute for bringing space consciousness into everyday life. Being aware of your breath forces you into the present moment, the key to all inner transformation. Whenever you are conscious of the breath, you are absolutely present. You may also notice that you cannot think and be aware of your breathing. Conscious breathing stops your mind. But far from being in a trance or half asleep, you are fully awake and highly alert. You are not falling below thinking, but rising above it. And if you look more closely, you will find that those two things, coming fully into the present moment and ceasing thinking without loss of consciousness, are actually one and the same, the arising of space consciousness. Addictions. A long-standing compulsive behavior pattern may be called an addiction, and an addiction lives inside you as a quasi-entity or sub-personality, an energy field that periodically takes you over completely. It even takes over your mind, the voice in your head, which then becomes the voice of the addiction. It may be saying, "You've had a rough day, you deserve a treat. Why deny yourself the only pleasure that is left in your life?" And so, if you are identified with the internal voice due to lack of awareness, you find yourself walking to the fridge and reaching for that rich chocolate cake. At other times, the addiction may bypass the thinking mind completely, and you suddenly find yourself puffing on a cigarette or holding a drink. "How did that get into my hand?" Taking the cigarette out of the packet and lighting it, or pouring yourself a drink, were actions performed in complete unconsciousness. If you have a compulsive behavior pattern such as smoking, overeating, drinking, TV watching, internet addiction, or whatever it may be, this is what you can do. When you notice the compulsive need arising in you, stop and take 3 conscious breaths. This generates awareness. Then for a few minutes be aware of the compulsive urge itself as an energy field inside you. Consciously feel that need to physically or mentally ingest or consume a certain substance, or the desire to act out some form of compulsive behavior. Then take a few more conscious breaths. After that, you may find that the compulsive urge has disappeared for the time being. Or you may find that it still overpowers you and you cannot help but indulge or act it out again. Don't make it into a problem. Make the addiction part of your awareness practice in the way described above. As awareness grows, addictive patterns will weaken and eventually dissolve. Remember, however, to catch any thoughts that justify the addictive behavior, sometimes with clever arguments, as they arise in your mind. Ask yourself, who is talking here? And you will realize the addiction is talking. As long as you know that, as long as you are present as the observer of your mind, it is less likely to trick you into doing what it wants. Inner body awareness. Another simple but highly effective way of finding space in your life is closely linked to the breath. You will find that by feeling the subtle flow of air in and out of the body, as well as the rise and fall of your chest and abdomen, you're also becoming aware of the inner body. Your attention may then shift from the breath to that felt aliveness within you, diffused throughout the body. Most people are so distracted by their thoughts, so identified with the voices in their heads, they can no longer feel the aliveness within them. To be unable to feel the life that animates the physical body, the very life that you are, is the greatest deprivation that can happen to you. You then begin to look not only for substitutes for that natural state of well-being within, but also for something to cover up the continuous unease that you feel when you are not in touch with the aliveness that is always there but usually overlooked. Some of the substitutes people seek out are drug-induced highs, sensory overstimulation such as excessively loud music, thrills or dangerous activities, or an obsession with sex. Even drama in relationships is used as a substitute for that genuine sense of aliveness. The most sought-after cover-up for the continuous background unease are intimate relationships. A man or a woman who is going to make me happy. It is, of course, also one of the most frequently experienced of all the letdowns. And when the unease surfaces again, people will usually blame their partner for it. Take 2 or 3 conscious breaths. Now see if you can detect a subtle sense of aliveness that pervades your entire inner body. Can you feel your body from within, so to speak? Sense briefly specific parts of your body. Feel your hands, then your arms, feet, and legs. Can you feel your abdomen, chest, neck, and head? What about your lips? Is there life in them? Then become aware again of the inner body as a whole. You may want to close your eyes initially for this practice. And once you can feel your body, open your eyes, look around, and continue to feel your body at the same time. Some readers may find there's no need to close their eyes. They can, in fact, feel their inner body as they read this. Inner and outer space. Your inner body is not solid but spacious. It is not your physical form but the life that animates the physical form. It is the intelligence that created and sustains the body, simultaneously coordinating hundreds of different functions of such extraordinary complexity that the human mind can only understand a tiny fraction of it. When you become aware of it, what is really happening is that the intelligence is becoming aware of itself. It is the elusive life that no scientist has ever found, because the consciousness that is looking for it is it. Physicists have discovered that the apparent solidity of matter is an illusion created by our senses. This includes the physical body, which we perceive and think of as form, but 99.99% of which is actually empty space. This is how vast the space is between the atoms compared to their size, and there's as much space again within each atom. The physical body is no more than a misperception of who you are. In many ways, it is a microcosmic version of outer space. To give you an idea of how vast the space is between celestial bodies, consider this. Light traveling at a constant speed of 186,000 miles or 300,000 kilometers per second takes just over 1 second to travel between the Earth and the Moon. Light from the Sun takes about 8 minutes to reach the Earth. Light from our nearest neighbor in space, a star called Proxima Centauri, which is the Sun that is closest to our own Sun, travels for 4.5 years before it reaches the Earth. This is how vast the space is that surrounds us. And then there's the intergalactic space, whose vastness defies all comprehension. Light from the galaxy closest to our own, the Andromeda Galaxy, takes 2.4 million years to reach us. Isn't it amazing that your body is just as spacious as the universe? So your physical body, which is form, reveals itself as essentially formless when you go deeper into it. It becomes a doorway into inner space. Although inner space has no form, it is intensely alive. That empty space is life in its fullness, the unmanifested source out of which all manifestation flows. The traditional word for that source is God. Thoughts and words belong to the world of form. They cannot express the formless. So when you say, "I can feel my inner body," that is a misperception created by thought. What is really happening is that the consciousness that appears as the body, the consciousness that I am, is becoming conscious of itself. When I no longer confuse who I am with the temporary form of me, then the dimension of the limitless and the eternal, God, can express itself through me and guide me. It also frees me from dependency on form. However, a purely intellectual recognition or belief that I am not this form does not help. The all-important question is, at this moment, can I sense the presence of inner space, which really means, can I sense my own presence, or rather, the presence that I am? Or we can approach this truth using a different pointer. Ask yourself, am I aware not only of what is happening at this moment, but also of the now itself as the living, timeless inner space in which everything happens? Although this question seems to have nothing to do with the inner body, you may be surprised that by becoming aware of the space of now, you suddenly feel more alive inside. You are feeling the aliveness of the inner body, the aliveness that is an intrinsic part of the joy of being. We have to enter the body to go beyond it and find out that we are not that. As much as possible in everyday life, use awareness of the inner body to create space. When waiting, when listening to someone, when pausing to look at the sky, a tree, a flower, your partner or child, feel the aliveness within at the same time. This means part of your attention or consciousness remains formless, and the rest is available for the outer world of form. Whenever you inhabit your body in this way, it serves as an anchor for staying present in the now. It prevents you from losing yourself in thinking, in emotions, or in external situations. When you think, feel, perceive, and experience, consciousness is born into form. It is reincarnating into a thought, a feeling, a sense perception, an experience. The cycle of rebirth that Buddhists hope to get out of eventually is happening continuously, and it is only at this moment, through the power of now, that you can get out of it. Through complete acceptance of the form of the now, you become internally aligned with space, which is the essence of now. Through acceptance, you become spacious inside. Aligned with space instead of form, that brings true perspective and balance into your life. Noticing the gaps. Throughout the day, there's a continuously changing succession of things that you see and hear. In the first moment of seeing something or hearing a sound, and more so if it is unfamiliar, before the mind names or interprets what you see or hear, there's usually a gap of alert attention in which the perception occurs. That is the inner space. Its duration differs from person to person. It is easy to miss because in many people those spaces are extremely short, perhaps only a second or less. This is what happens. A new sight or sound arises, and in the first moment of perception, there's a brief cessation in the habitual stream of thinking. Consciousness is diverted away from thought because it is required for sense perception. A very unusual sight or sound may leave you speechless, even inside, that is to say, bring about a longer gap. The frequency and duration of those spaces determine your ability to enjoy life, to feel an inner connectedness with other human beings as well as nature. It also determines the degree to which you are free of ego, because ego implies complete unawareness of the dimension of space. When you become conscious of these brief spaces as they happen naturally, they will lengthen, and as they do, you will experience with increasing frequency the joy of perceiving with little or no interference of thinking. The world around you then feels fresh, new, and alive. The more you perceive life through a mental screen of abstraction and conceptualization, the more lifeless and flat the world around you becomes. Lose yourself to find yourself. Inner space also arises whenever you let go of the need to emphasize your form identity. That need is of the ego. It is not a true need. We have already touched briefly upon this. Whenever you relinquish one of these behavior patterns, inner space emerges. You become more truly yourself. To the ego it will seem as if you were losing yourself, but the opposite is the case. Jesus already taught that you need to lose yourself to find yourself. Whenever you let go of one of these patterns, you de-emphasize who you are on the level of form, and who you are beyond form emerges more fully. You become less, so you can be more. Here are some ways in which people unconsciously try to emphasize their form identity. If you are alert enough, you may be able to detect some of these unconscious patterns within yourself. Demanding recognition for something you did and getting angry or upset if you don't get it. Trying to get attention by talking about your problems, the story of your illnesses, or making a scene. Giving your opinion when nobody has asked for it and it makes no difference to the situation. Being more concerned with how the other person sees you than with the other person. which is to say, using other people for egoic reflection or as ego enhancers. Trying to make an impression on others through possessions, knowledge, good looks, status, physical strength, and so on. Bringing about temporary ego inflation through angry reaction against something or someone. Taking things personally. Feeling offended. Making yourself right and others wrong through futile mental or verbal complaining. Wanting to be seen or to appear important. Once you have detected such a pattern within yourself, I suggest that you conduct an experiment. Find out what it feels like and what happens if you let go of that pattern. Just drop it and see what happens. De-emphasizing who you are on the level of form is another way of generating consciousness. Discover the enormous power that flows through you into the world when you stop emphasizing your form identity. Stillness. It has been said, stillness is the language God speaks, and everything else is a bad translation. Stillness is really another word for space. Becoming conscious of stillness whenever we encounter it in our lives will connect us with the formless and timeless dimension within ourselves, that which is beyond thought, beyond ego. It may be the stillness that pervades the world of nature, or the stillness in your room in the early hours of the morning, or the silent gaps in between sounds. Stillness has no form. That is why through thinking we cannot become aware of it. Thought is form. Being aware of stillness means to be still. To be still is to be conscious without thought. You are never more essentially, more deeply yourself than when you are still. When you are still, you are who you were before you temporarily assumed this physical and mental form called a person. You are also who you will be when the form dissolves. When you are still, you are who you are beyond your temporal existence. Consciousness. Unconditioned, formless, eternal. Chapter 9. Your inner purpose. As soon as you rise above mere survival, the question of meaning and purpose becomes of paramount importance in your life. Many people feel caught up in the routines of daily living, which seem to deprive their life of significance. Some believe life is passing them by, or has passed them by already. Others feel severely restricted by the demands of their job and supporting a family, or by their financial or living situation. Some are consumed by acute stress, others by acute boredom. Some are lost in frantic doing, others are lost in stagnation. Many people long for the freedom and expansion that prosperity promises. Others already enjoy the relative freedom that comes with prosperity and discover that even that is not enough to endow their lives with meaning. There's no substitute for finding true purpose. But the true or primary purpose of your life cannot be found on the outer level. It does not concern what you do, but what you are, that is to say, your state of consciousness. So the most important thing to realize is this. Your life has an inner purpose and an outer purpose. Inner purpose concerns being and is primary. Outer purpose concerns doing and is secondary. While this book speaks mainly of your inner purpose, this chapter and the next will also address the question of how to align outer purpose and inner purpose in your life. Inner and outer, however, are so intertwined that it is almost impossible to speak of one without referring to the other. Your inner purpose is to awaken. It is as simple as that. You share that purpose with every other person on the planet, because it is the purpose of humanity. Your inner purpose is an essential part of the purpose of the whole, the universe and its emerging intelligence. Your outer purpose can change over time. It varies greatly from person to person. Finding and living in alignment with the inner purpose is the foundation for fulfilling your outer purpose. It is the basis for true success. Without that alignment, you can still achieve certain things through effort, struggle, determination, and sheer hard work or cunning. But there's no joy in such endeavor, and it invariably ends in some form of suffering. Awakening. Awakening is a shift in consciousness in which thinking and awareness separate. For most people, it is not an event, but a process they undergo. Even those rare beings who experience a sudden, dramatic, and seemingly irreversible awakening will still go through a process in which the new state of consciousness gradually flows into and transforms everything they do, and so becomes integrated into their lives. Instead of being lost in your thinking, when you are awake, you recognize yourself as the awareness behind it. Thinking then ceases to be a self-serving, autonomous activity that takes possession of you and runs your life. Awareness takes over from thinking. Instead of being in charge of your life, thinking becomes the servant of awareness. Awareness is conscious connection with universal intelligence. Another word for it is presence, consciousness without thought. The initiation of the awakening process is an act of grace. You cannot make it happen, nor can you prepare yourself for it or accumulate credits towards it. There isn't a tidy sequence of logical steps that leads towards it, although the mind would love that. You don't have to become worthy first. It may come to the sinner before it comes to the saint, but not necessarily. That's why Jesus associated with all kinds of people, not just the respectable ones. There's nothing you can do about awakening. Whatever you do will be the ego trying to add awakening or enlightenment to itself as its most prized possession, and thereby making itself more important and bigger. Instead of awakening, you add the concept of awakening to your mind, or the mental image of what an awakened or enlightened person is like, and then try to live up to that image. Living up to an image that you have of yourself, or that other people have of you, is inauthentic living, another unconscious role the ego plays. So if there's nothing you can do about awakening, if it has either already happened or not yet happened, how can it be the primary purpose of your life? Does not purpose imply that you can do something about it? Only the first awakening, the first glimpse of consciousness without thought, happens by grace, without any doing on your part. If you find this book incomprehensible or meaningless, it has not yet happened to you. If something within you responds to it, however, if you somehow recognize the truth in it, it means the process of awakening has begun. Once it has done so, it cannot be reversed, although it can be delayed by the ego. For some people, the reading of this book will initiate the awakening process. For others, the function of this book is to help them recognize that they have already begun to awaken, and to intensify and accelerate the process. Another function of this book is to help people recognize the ego within them whenever it tries to regain control and obscure the arising awareness. For some, the awakening happens as they suddenly become aware of the kinds of thoughts they habitually think, especially persistent negative thoughts that they may have been identified with all of their lives. Suddenly, there's an awareness that is aware of thought, but is not part of it. What is the relationship between awareness and thinking? Awareness is the space in which thoughts exist, when that space has become conscious of itself. Once you've had a glimpse of awareness or presence, you know it firsthand. It is no longer just a concept in your mind. You can then make a conscious choice to be present rather than to indulge in useless thinking. You can invite presence into your life, that is to say, make space. With the grace of awakening comes responsibility. You can either try to go on as if nothing has happened, or you can see its significance and recognize the arising of awareness as the most important thing that can happen to you. Opening yourself to the emerging consciousness and bringing its light into this world then becomes the primary purpose of your life. "I want to know the mind of God," Einstein said. "The rest are details." What is the mind of God? Consciousness. What does it mean to know the mind of God? To be aware. What are the details? Your outer purpose, and whatever happens outwardly. So while you are perhaps still waiting for something significant to happen in your life, you may not realize that the most significant thing that can happen to a human being has already happened within you, the beginning of the separation process of thinking and awareness. Many people who are going through the early stages of the awakening process are no longer certain what their outer purpose is. What drives the world no longer drives them. Seeing the madness of our civilization so clearly, they may feel somewhat alienated from the culture around them. Some feel that they inhabit a no man's land between two worlds. They are no longer run by the ego, yet the arising awareness has not yet become fully integrated into their lives. Inner and outer purpose have not merged. A dialogue on inner purpose. The following dialogue condenses numerous conversations I've had with people who were looking for their true life purpose. Something is true when it resonates with and expresses your innermost being, when it is in alignment with your inner purpose. This is why I'm directing their attention to their inner and primary purpose first. "I don't know exactly what it is, but I want some change in my life. I want expansion. I want to be doing something meaningful, and yes, I want prosperity and the freedom that comes with it. I want to do something significant, something that makes a difference in the world. But if you asked me what exactly I want, I would have to say that I don't know. Can you help me find my life purpose?" Your purpose is to sit here and talk to me, because that's where you are and that's what you're doing. Until you get up and do something else. Then that becomes your purpose. "So my purpose is to sit in my office for the next 30 years until I retire or get laid off?" You are not in your office now, so that's not your purpose. When you do sit in your office and do whatever you do, then that is your purpose. Not for the next 30 years, but for now. "I think there's some misunderstanding here. For you, purpose means what you're doing now. For me, it means having an overall aim in life, something big and significant that gives meaning to what I do, something that makes a difference. Shuffling papers in the office is not it. I know that." As long as you are unaware of being, you will seek meaning only within the dimension of doing and of future. That is to say, the dimension of time. And whatever meaning or fulfillment you find will dissolve or turn out to have been a deception. Invariably, it will be destroyed by time. Any meaning we find on that level is true only relatively and temporarily. For example, if caring for your children gives meaning to your life, what happens to that meaning when they don't need you and perhaps don't even listen to you anymore? If helping others gives meaning to your life, you depend on others being worse off than yourself so that your life can continue to be meaningful and you can feel good about yourself. If the desire to excel, win, or succeed at this or that activity provides you with meaning, what if you never win, or your winning streak comes to an end one day, as it will? You would then have to look to your imagination or memories, a very unsatisfactory place to bring some meager meaning into your life. Making it, in whatever field, is only meaningful as long as there are thousands or millions of others who don't make it. So you need other human beings to fail so that your life can have meaning. I'm not saying here that helping others, caring for your children, or striving for excellence in whatever field are not worthwhile things to do. For many people, they are an important part of their outer purpose. But outer purpose alone is always relative, unstable, and impermanent. This does not mean that you should not be engaged in those activities. It means you should connect them to your inner, primary purpose, so that a deeper meaning flows into what you do. Without living in alignment with your primary purpose, whatever purpose you come up with, even if it is to create heaven on earth, will be of the ego or become destroyed by time. Sooner or later, it will lead to suffering. If you ignore your inner purpose, no matter what you do, even if it looks spiritual, the ego will creep into how you do it, and so the means will corrupt the end. The common saying, "The road to hell is paved with good intentions," points to this truth. In other words, not your aims or your actions are primary, but the state of consciousness out of which they come. Fulfilling your primary purpose is laying the foundation for a new reality, a new earth. Once that foundation is there, your external purpose becomes charged with spiritual power, because your aims and intentions will be one with the evolutionary impulse of the universe. The separation of thinking and awareness, which lies at the core of your primary purpose, happens through the negation of time. We are not speaking here, of course, of the use of time for practical purposes, such as making an appointment or planning a trip. We are not speaking of clock time, but of psychological time, which is the mind's deep-seated habit of seeking the fullness of life in the future where it cannot be found, and ignoring the only point of access to it, the present moment. When you look upon what you do or where you are as the main purpose of your life, you negate time. This is enormously empowering. The negation of time in what you do also provides the link between your inner and outer purposes, between being and doing. When you negate time, you negate the ego. Whatever you do, you will be doing extraordinarily well, because the doing itself becomes the focal point of your attention. Your doing then becomes a channel through which consciousness enters this world. This means there is quality in what you do, even in the most simple action, like turning the pages in the phone book or walking across the room. The main purpose for turning the pages is to turn the pages. The secondary purpose is to find a phone number. The main purpose for walking across the room is to walk across the room. The secondary purpose is to pick up a book at the other end. And the moment you pick up the book, that becomes your main purpose. You may remember the paradox of time we mentioned earlier. Whatever you do takes time, and yet it is always now. So while your inner purpose is to negate time, your outer purpose necessarily involves future and so could not exist without time. But it is always secondary. Whenever you become anxious or stressed, outer purpose has taken over and you lost sight of your inner purpose. You have forgotten that your state of consciousness is primary, all else secondary. Would living like this not stop me from looking to achieve something great? My fear is that I will remain stuck with doing little things for the rest of my life, things that are of no consequence. I'm afraid of never rising above mediocrity, never daring to achieve anything great, not fulfilling my potential. The great arises out of small things that are honored and cared for. Everybody's life really consists of small things. Greatness is a mental abstraction and a favorite fantasy of the ego. The paradox is that the foundation for greatness is honoring the small things of the present moment instead of pursuing the idea of greatness. The present moment is always small in the sense that it is always simple, but concealed within it lies the greatest power. Like the atom, it is one of the smallest things yet contains enormous power. Only when you align yourself with the present moment do you have access to that power. Or it may be more true to say that it then has access to you, and through you to this world. Jesus was referring to this power when he said, "It is not I, but the Father within me who does the works," and, "I can of my own self do nothing." Anxiety, stress, and negativity cut you off from that power. The illusion that you are separate from the power that runs the universe returns. You feel yourself to be alone again, struggling against something or trying to achieve this or that. But why did anxiety, stress, or negativity arise? Because you turned away from the present moment. And why did you do that? You thought something else was more important. You forgot your main purpose. One small error, one misperception, creates a world of suffering. Through the present moment, you have access to the power of life itself, that which has traditionally been called God. As soon as you turn away from it, God ceases to be a reality in your life, and all you are left with is the mental concept of God, which some people believe in and others deny. Even belief in God is only a poor substitute for the living reality of God manifesting every moment of your life. Would complete harmony with the present moment not imply the cessation of all movement? Doesn't the existence of any goal imply that there's a temporary disruption in that harmony with the present moment, and perhaps a re-establishment of harmony at a higher or more complex level once the goal has been attained? I imagine that the sapling that pushes its way through the soil can't be in total harmony with the present moment either, because it has a goal. It wants to become a big tree. Maybe once it has reached maturity, it will live in harmony with the present moment. The sapling doesn't want anything because it is at one with the totality, and the totality acts through it. "Look at the lilies of the field, how they grow," said Jesus. "They toil not, neither do they spin. Yet even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these." We could say that the totality, life, wants the sapling to become a tree, but the sapling doesn't see itself as separate from life, and so wants nothing for itself. It is one with what life wants. That's why it isn't worried or stressed. And if it has to die prematurely, it dies with ease. It is as surrendered in death as it is in life. It senses, no matter how obscurely, its rootedness in being, the formless and eternal one life. Like the Taoist sages of ancient China, Jesus likes to draw our attention to nature because he sees a power at work in it that humans have lost touch with. It is the creative power of the universe. Jesus goes on to say that if God clothes simple flowers in such beauty, how much more will God clothe you? That is to say, that while nature is a beautiful expression of the evolutionary impulse of the universe, when humans become aligned with the intelligence that underlies it, they will express that same impulse on a higher, more wondrous level. So be true to life by being true to your inner purpose. As you become present and thereby total in what you do, your actions become charged with spiritual power. At first there may be no noticeable change in what you do, only the how changes. Your primary purpose is now to enable consciousness to flow into what you do. The secondary purpose is whatever you want to achieve through the doing. Whereas the notion of purpose before was always associated with future, there's now a deeper purpose that can only be found in the present, through the denial of time. When you meet with people, at work or wherever it may be, give them your fullest attention. You're no longer there primarily as a person, but as a field of awareness, of alert presence. The original reason for interacting with the other person, buying or selling something, requesting or giving information, and so on, now becomes secondary. The field of awareness that arises between you becomes the primary purpose for the interaction. That space of awareness becomes more important than what you may be talking about, more important than physical or thought objects. The human being becomes more important than the things of this world. It does not mean you neglect whatever needs to be done on a practical level. In fact, the doing unfolds not only more easily, but more powerfully when the dimension of being is acknowledged and so becomes primary. The arising of that unifying field of awareness between human beings is the most essential factor in relationships on the new earth. Is the notion of success just an egoic illusion? How do we measure true success? The world will tell you that success is achieving what you set out to do. It will tell you that success is winning, that finding recognition and or prosperity are essential ingredients in any success. All or some of the above are usually byproducts of success, but they are not success. The conventional notion of success is concerned with the outcome of what you do. Some say that success is the result of a combination of hard work and luck, or determination and talent, or being in the right place at the right time. While any of these may be determinants of success, they are not its essence. What the world doesn't tell you, because it doesn't know, is that you cannot become successful. You can only be successful. Don't let a mad world tell you that success is anything other than a successful present moment. And what is that? There is a sense of quality in what you do, even the most simple action. Quality implies care and attention, which come with awareness. Quality requires your presence. Let's say that you are a business person and after 2 years of intense stress and strain, you finally manage to come out with a product or service that sells well and makes money. Success? In conventional terms, yes. In reality, you spend 2 years polluting your body as well as the earth with negative energy, made yourself and those around you miserable, and affected many others you never even met. The unconscious assumption behind all such action is that success is a future event, and that the end justifies the means. But the end and the means are one. And if the means did not contribute to human happiness, neither will the end. The outcome, which is inseparable from the actions that led to it, is already contaminated by those actions, and so will create further unhappiness. This is karmic action, which is the unconscious perpetuation of unhappiness. As you already know, your secondary or outer purpose lies within the dimension of time, while your main purpose is inseparable from the now and therefore requires the negation of time. How are they reconciled? By realizing that your entire life journey ultimately consists of the step you are taking at this moment. There's always only this one step, and so you give it your fullest attention. This doesn't mean you don't know where you're going. It just means this step is primary, the destination secondary. And what you encounter at your destination once you get there depends on the quality of this one step. Another way of putting it, what the future holds for you depends on your state of consciousness now. When doing becomes infused with the timeless quality of being, that is success. Unless being flows into doing, unless you are present, you lose yourself in whatever you do. You also lose yourself in thinking, as well as in your reactions to what happens externally. What exactly do you mean when you say you lose yourself? The essence of who you are is consciousness. When consciousness, you, becomes completely identified with thinking and thus forgets its essential nature, it loses itself in thought. When it becomes identified with mental-emotional formations such as wanting and fearing, the primary motivating forces of the ego, it loses itself in those formations. Consciousness also loses itself when it identifies with acting and reacting to what happens. Every thought, every desire or fear, every action or reaction is then infused with a false sense of self that is incapable of sensing the simple joy of being, and so seeks pleasure and sometimes even pain as substitutes for it. This is living in forgetfulness of being. In that state of forgetfulness of who you are, every success is no more than a passing delusion. Whatever you achieve, soon you will be unhappy again, or some new problem or dilemma will draw your attention in completely.
End of Disc 7.
How do I go from realizing what my inner purpose is to finding out what I'm supposed to do on the outer level? The outer purpose varies greatly from person to person, and no outer purpose lasts forever. It is subject to time and then replaced by some other purpose. The extent to which dedication to the inner purpose of awakening changes the external circumstances of your life also varies greatly. For some people, there is a sudden or gradual break with their past, their work, living situation, relationships, everything undergoes profound change. Some of the change may be initiated by themselves, not through an agonizing decision-making process, but by a sudden realization or recognition, this is what I have to do. The decision arrives ready-made, so to speak. It comes through awareness, not through thinking. You wake up one morning and you know what to do. Some people find themselves walking out of an insane work environment or living situation. So before you discover what is right for you on the external level, before you discover what works, what is compatible with the awakening consciousness, you may have to find out what is not right, what no longer works, what is incompatible with your inner purpose. Other kinds of change may suddenly come to you from without. A chance meeting brings new opportunity and expansion into your life. A long-standing obstacle or conflict dissolves. Your friends either go through this inner transformation with you or drift out of your life. Some relationships dissolve, others deepen. You may get laid off from your job, or you become an agent for positive change at your workplace. Your spouse leaves you, or you reach a new level of intimacy. Some changes may look negative on the surface, but you will soon realize that space is being created in your life for something new to emerge. There may be a period of insecurity and uncertainty. What should I do? As the ego is no longer running your life, the psychological need for external security, which is illusory anyway, lessens. You are able to live with uncertainty, even enjoy it. When you become comfortable with uncertainty, infinite possibilities open up in your life. It means fear is no longer a dominant factor in what you do and no longer prevents you from taking action to initiate change. The Roman philosopher Tacitus rightly observed that the desire for safety stands against every great and noble enterprise. If uncertainty is unacceptable to you, it turns into fear. If it is perfectly acceptable, it turns into increased aliveness, alertness, and creativity. Many years ago, when as a result of a strong inner impulse, I walked out of an academic career that the world would have called promising, stepping into complete uncertainty. And out of that, after several years, emerged my new incarnation as a spiritual teacher. Much later, something similar happened again. The impulse came to give up my home in England and move to the west coast of North America. I obeyed that impulse, although I didn't know the reason for it. Out of that move into uncertainty came the power of now, most of which was written in California and British Columbia while I didn't have a home of my own. I had virtually no income and lived on my savings, which were quickly running out. In fact, everything fell into place beautifully. I ran out of money just as I was getting close to finishing writing. I bought a lottery ticket